I'm Rick Gamley, and this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The vast majority of Americans will have their babies in a hospital. However, for a small but growing slice of parents, that's no longer considered ideal. They're favoring instead birth at home or at a home-like birthing center guided by a midwife. The overall number of these out-of-hospital births is still tiny, but the increases over the past decade are impressive in some states, including New Hampshire. It's enough of a trend to set off a major conversation in the medical community. Among those doctors who feel it's safer for babies and moms to be in a hospital setting, midwives and other providers who feel hospital births have their own problems, and especially parents, some of whom want that old-fashioned comfort of home as they introduce their new child to the world. Today in The Exchange, where to give birth, the choices parents make today in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. What are the pros and cons of these different settings in your opinion? And if you have kids, which setting did you choose? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We had three guests in studio. Dr. Tim Fisher is here. He's chairman of surgical services at Cheshire Medical Center, Dartmouth Hitchcock Keene, and assistant clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth. And Dr. Fisher, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to be here.
Also with us, Autumn Virgo. She's a New Hampshire certified midwife, co-owner of the Birth Cottage in Milford, a freestanding birth center and home birth practice. And Autumn, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Dr. Og Young, obstetrician at Concord Hospital, former president of the New Hampshire Medical Society. Dr. Young has been practicing for more than 30 years in the Concord area. And Dr. Young, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to see you.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, and all of you, I want to just look at these numbers from the CDC. This is what got our attention. New Hampshire and about a dozen other states showed small but impressive increases in the number of people choosing out-of-hospital births. What do they show, Dr. Fisher? What do you see when you look at these?
Well, Laura, as I'm sure you've seen in those statistics, the number of births that take place in home or birth center settings in the United States has grown over the last decade or so. Overall, it's still a relatively small number, about 1% nationally. My recollection is that number in New Hampshire is closer to about 3%, so we are higher than the national average.
So it's tiny, but it's growing.
Correct.
Yeah. Autumn, what do you see in these numbers?
Well, I see New Hampshire as a unique state in home birth because we have had licensure for home birth midwives since 1981. So we had some changes in women's ability to access home birth in this state a few years ago because insurance companies started to pay for home birth in New Hampshire. And I think some of the rise in our state is attributed to that, to increased access.
Now, that's interesting. So it's partly about cultural shifts or other choices that parents make, but it's also how easy or hard is it to make that choice? So that's why it varies from state to state. Autumn.
That's right.
What do you think of these numbers, Dr. Young? Again, they're small, but the increases have been noticed.
Well, I think New Hampshire is a unique state, and women here like to make a conscious choice about where they want to have their babies. If you look at an article from the Journal of Midwives, and women's health, they choose home births because a lot of women feel it's safer. They want to be in a familiar environment. They want to avoid medical intervention. And they want to be in control of their labor and delivery. And those are all good reasons that women might choose a home birth.
And yet, you know, you could say, wow, safer. Some people might say it's safer in the hospital. You've got the doctor standing by, you get all the technology and expertise. What do you think about this safety concern that some women now feel like it's not safe to have a baby in the hospital?
Well, I'm a little biased. I am an obstetrician, and I do believe the best place to have a baby is in the hospital. And if you look at neonatal mortality risks, they are higher when a woman has a baby at home, which surprises me when you think about it. Women who choose home birth are usually lower risk, and about 10 to 12%, 1 in 8 to 1 in 10 women are transferred from a home birth setting for complications in their pregnancy, and those end up as hospital deliveries. So when you look at neonatal mortality rates that are higher in home birth, I think you have to be concerned about that.
Dr. Fisher, what's the safety concern that women have when it comes to the hospital births? Is it, you know, scary stories about hospital infections? Is it the rate of C-sections? Is it the drugs? What are women worried about? And Autumn, I want to get you in on this too.
Boy, Laura, this is, we've really gotten right to the heart of the issue, I think. And this conversation about safety is a really interesting one. Og had referred to a recent study, and there's been a real flurry of activity in the medical literature over the last few years around this issue of safety. Briefly, the methodologies used in this research vary quite a bit. And I guess what I would say to summarize is it's a hard thing to really get at. And so, for example, much of the research has been done based on vital statistics data, in other words, information that's culled from medical records based on information in the birth certificate, which unfortunately doesn't tell us where the intended place of birth was. And it in many states, the birth certificate fails to distinguish between a planned versus an unplanned out-of-hospital birth. And we know that unplanned, unattended, often out-of-hospital births are very, very high risk. So there's some noise in that safety information. There have been some other studies that have been more observational, both in the U.S. and in other countries, where some of those safety issues seem to even out a little bit. Sorry, to get back to your original question.
Sure, yeah. You're right, though. There has been a lot of conflicting data, a lot of conflicting studies, and a lot of arguing about that. But what are the concerns that women have on hospital births? Again, some people listening might think, well, sure, the hospital, that's the safest place to be. That's where the docs are.
Right. And Og alluded to it, and I think it's really important. I think for many women and families, much of this choice is informed by issues related to autonomy and comfort and choices about who will both attend their birth and support them during their birth. There are some risks associated to being in a hospital, whether you're there to have a baby or to have your gallbladder out. So, yes, we know that infectious complications potentially are higher in hospital settings. We know that certain kinds of obstetrical interventions, for instance, episiotomies, cesarean deliveries, operative vaginal deliveries among women of similar risk in home versus hospital, those are higher in hospitals. So this conversation about risk and safety, when you get beyond the mortality information, gets broad pretty quickly.
Yeah, Autumn, what are some of the concerns that women have about hospital births?
So I think that that in addition to the concerns already raised, women are aware that the maternity care system as a whole in the United States is not always doing a great job in serving women and serving babies. They are reading the reports from the CDC and from Amnesty International that are saying that we have a long way to go toward our goal of really serving women and babies in the United States. There are many countries in the world where it is safer to be a mother or to have a baby than in the United States. And for some women, you know, they don't care for those odds and want to have more control and want to have a closer relationship with their care provider and want to feel like they're truly a partner in their care.
Is it the C-sections? Is that partly it, Autumn? People feel like, you know, we keep hearing about this rising trend of more cesarean sections. I don't have the exact numbers right in front of me, but I think in the 90s it was, you know, 10%, and now it's 30% or something stunning like that.
Right. The rate has really risen exponentially. It's around 30% in the United States now. And as a benchmark, the World Health Organization suggests that a safe rate would be between 10 and 15%. So that's certainly a concern for women. On the other hand, midwifery care in out-of-hospital settings usually has a C-section rate of about 5%. You know, and the most recent safety data we have shows that the deliveries are equivalently safe to having a low-risk delivery in the hospital, but with lower rates of intervention, and that is what some women want.
All right, and Dr. Young, I want to get you back in on this too, but let me also invite our listeners to join us. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the different choices that expectant parents make when it comes to giving birth. The vast majority still choose to give birth in a hospital, but as we're hearing, there's a small but growing trend of people either giving birth at home or to a home-like birthing center. Join us with your comments, questions, concerns, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. You can post a comment there if you'd like. Dr. Young, let's talk about the C-sections. I know that that's a big concern.
Well, it is. And personally, I have a hard time defending our C-section rate of 33%.
It's gone up a lot just in the last 20 years.
Well, if you look, I actually remember the statistics well. In 1930, the C-section rate was 3%. In 1970, 40 years later, it was 5%. And now, 40 years later, it's 33%.
So what's going on there?
Well, there are a number of things going on. First of all, before 1970, we primarily did C-sections to save the mom's life. And after 1970, we began doing C-sections to deliver a better baby. C-sections have become much safer than they were before 1970. We're not doing operative deliveries as we did. We don't deliver breeches vaginally as we did.
Breech means the baby's upside down, foot first instead of head first.
Right,
is that right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and you don't want to deliver that vaginally. Yeah.
And we actually have a number of women choosing to have a primary elective cesarean section. In other words, they would rather have a C-section than try labor and a vaginal delivery. So
now, why is that?
Well,
they'd rather have surgery where you're cut open and you have that long recovery and possibly a scar on your stomach. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's very clear that the risk of C-section increases markedly when a woman's labored and then has a C-section versus having a C-section before she labors. But now that women are living a long time, they're realizing that vaginal birth has its risks in terms of future pelvic relaxation, urinary incontinence. And there are risks to the baby with vaginal delivery. And so I think all of those things have played into women sometimes making that choice.
All right. Well, lots of people who want to join us, and we will go to you after a short break. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR is looking at the challenges facing colleges and students with a special series. A Matter of Degrees considers falling enrollment numbers and rising debt loads and the effects it all has on New Hampshire's economy. Join us all next week for A Matter of Degrees on NHPR and NHPR.org. This series made possible with support from the Dairy Field School and Edvest in You. More on changing childbirth choices on The Exchange, then attend on The Diane Rehm Show, The Personal, Social, and Economic Cost of Racism. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Franklin Pierce University, offering their online Master of Education and Teacher Certification programs. Information online at franklinpierce.edu. And Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Bow, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. It's 940. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the small but growing trend of more New Hampshire parents deciding to have their babies at home or at a freestanding birthing center. In other words, out-of-hospital births, as they're called. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. Post a comment there if you'd like. We have three guests in studio. Dr. Og Young, obstetrician at Concord Hospital. He's been practicing for more than 30 years in the Concord area. Dr. Tim Fisher, chairman of surgical services at Cheshire Medical Center, Dartmouth Hitchcock Keene. He's been working on improving cooperation between home birth providers and obstetricians in the region. Autumn Virgo is also here. She's a New Hampshire certified midwife and co-owner of the Birth Cottage in Milford. And all of you, let's go to our listeners now. And first up is Jennifer in Wilton. Hi, Jennifer, you're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in. Jennifer, are you with us? Good morning. Okay, I'm hoping Jennifer will call back. Jennifer, we do want to hear your story, so hopefully you'll join us in just a moment. Chris is joining us from Kittery. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, Laura. Hi, panel. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
One of the questions I was wondering about the decision for some mothers to be to have their children at home that hasn't been brought up. Is there a cost thing involved there? Because I know that the U.S. has one of the highest rates of payment for babies to be born in hospital. Is there a cost thing? Would it be cheap? Is it cheaper for them to be born at home? And is this a consideration?
You know, Chris, is a great question. Do you want to jump in on that, Dr. Fisher?
Sure, Laura. Chris, it is a great question, and it's something that we're seeing as a concern and consideration for families much more often now with changes in health insurance plans. And your point is well taken. The cost of childbirth in the United States is quite high. Conservative estimates would say we spend about $50 billion a year in this country on maternity services. And one of my concerns from a health policy standpoint is, what are we getting for our money? And if you look at how the U.S. compares to many other industrialized countries, I would argue that we're not getting a lot of bang for our buck, or as much as we should, in terms of the outcomes for women and babies. More specifically, back to the issue of cost, and I have some, I think it's based on about 2010 data. It costs on average, there's this difference between charges and payments. We don't have to get into that too much. But a vaginal birth in a hospital can range from about $9,000 up to about $18,000. And for a cesarean birth, from about $14,000 up to about $30,000.
Wow, $30,000. Now, I'm hoping insurance often covers some of that.
Covers some, but as we all know, we are being increasingly responsible for more and more of our out-of-pocket healthcare costs. So I think this is a real issue for families.
Well, the economics is a big issue. Thank you for raising it, Chris. Autumn, I want to hear from you, and Dr. Young, I have a question for you, too. Go ahead, Autumn.
Sure. For just a point of comparison, for a home delivery in New Hampshire or a birth center delivery, the total bill charges is usually somewhere around between $4,000 and $6,000, and that includes all of the prenatal and postpartum care. So for some families who are paying out of pocket, that is a consideration because it's, you know, it's half or less than half what it would cost for an uncomplicated vaginal delivery in the hospital.
So in terms of New Hampshire, and I think you said this earlier, Autumn, home births are often covered by insurance.
They are, and they're also covered by Medicaid in New Hampshire.
Okay. Dr. Young, a question for you. Again, this gets back to the C-section question. I came across an article that suggested that part of the reason that more C-sections were being given was because the doctors in the hospitals made more money off of that, and I wonder what you think about that.
That's really not true, and I'll give you some history to that. When I came to Concord in 1982, I actually went to Blue Cross Blue Shield and explained to them that I didn't want anybody to think we were motivated to do C-sections because we were being paid more. And we established with them that reimbursement for vaginal delivery would be the same for C-section. And there might be a difference with some insurance companies today, but I don't think it's that big a difference. And I'd really like to make clear that obstetricians are not doing C-sections for monetary reasons. Sadly, and I didn't mention this in terms of increasing C-section rate, sadly, obstetricians have learned if they do a C-section, they're less likely to be sued. That an obstetrician's never sued for a C-section. We're always sued if we're sued for a C-section we didn't perform. And that has driven the C-section rate as well.
That's interesting. So there's this fear overhanging you that if you don't do the C-section, you get blamed in a lawsuit.
Yes.
Wow. Dr. Fisher?
I would just absolutely concur with those comments.
And Autumn, you know, I feel like we've been sort of picking on C-sections for the last couple minutes, but, you know, women used to die a lot in childbirth. I mean, you go to any old New Hampshire graveyard and you'll see here lies Josiah Smith and his three wives, and you look at the dates and you can make a pretty good guess that they might have died in childbirth. Women often died because of this. So what are your thoughts there that, you know, before we go too far picking on some of these newer medical interventions, we need to remember this very dark history of women dying having kids?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I don't think anyone is arguing that no woman should have a cesarean section. I think that the rate in the United States is too high. But midwifery care is a demonstration that it can safely be lower than what it is typically in the United States. One of the ways that we make sure in community settings that women are safe is to carefully pre-screen them to make sure that they don't have risk factors that would make it safer for them to be in the hospital. The attendance of a skilled provider is really important. And the third thing that makes home birth safe in New Hampshire and elsewhere is having ready access to hospital care if we need it. So to understand that it's needed in a timely way and be able to get to a hospital when we need to is how we ensure safety in the home birth setting.
How far is your birthing center from a hospital facility?
We're about 15 minutes away.
About 15 minutes. I'm interested in the pre-screening, too, and I have heard that midwives need to pre-screen their patients carefully. And if there's any risk factors that might be at play, you have to say to them, Autumn, correct me if I'm wrong, no, you need to go to Dr. Young or Dr. Fisher.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right.
I have also heard that with more young women being overweight or obese, that in and of itself is considered a risk factor, and that you midwives have had to turn more people away. Is that right?
It's true. New Hampshire has a very specifically defined scope of practice for midwives, and one of the contraindications for having a home birth is being diabetic. So for women who are overweight or have gestational diabetes, they're not candidates for home birth in New Hampshire.
All right. Let's take some more calls. Thanks again for that one, Chris. And next to Jack. Go ahead, Jack. You're on the exchange.
Good morning. I believe it's time to change the conversation. We have the health care industry, the maternity care industry, has had decades to turn this problem around of maternal mortality and infant mortality, and the numbers are not getting better. I can't speak to all the numbers, and I know that some of the numbers are getting better, and I agree with the fact that a lot of women are have, you know, their tombstones indicate they died early in life, but midwives are very qualified and skilled care providers. They spend, a typical midwife will spend an hour at a prenatal visit, whereas when you go to an obstetrician, I think you're lucky to see the obstetrician for 5 or 10 minutes. So I want to change the conversation in South Carolina, where I am, and in the United States and in New Hampshire, and say, why are the birth statistics in the United States of America poorer than most other modern industrial nations?
Okay. Jack, thank you for the call. What do you think, Dr. Fisher?
Jack, really interesting points. This is and I agree with you fundamentally, this is another really interesting conversation. There are various, I think, reasons that we know of and others that we don't. We clearly have rising rates of, I would say, unhealthy behaviors and more medically complicated pregnancies. That's for sure. And we see really, really stark differences geographically and socioeconomically. So the comparison of the U.S. with other Western countries, I think, is complicated a bit by the fact that we are much more heterogeneous than, say, Great Britain or the Netherlands. I think there are some other fundamental issues related to the way that we deliver care. To get to your point about differences in how much time people can spend with their care provider.
It has to do with the prenatal care.
Potentially. And so there are some really interesting new models that are being experimented with, I guess. One is a program called Centering Pregnancy, which is a facilitated group prenatal care model that we've been using in our practice at Cheshire and has been shown in quite a few studies to have improved lower rates of preterm birth, lower rates of C-section, higher rates of breastfeeding at 6 months. So I agree. I think it's time that we think about our care delivery model in an effort to improve these statistics.
But to your first point, Dr. Fisher, it sounds like you're saying, yes, Jack, you're right. Look at the system. But the American women who are getting pregnant are also perhaps not as in good condition. They have more risk factors than you might see in these other industrialized countries. They might be more likely to smoke. They might be more likely to be overweight. And so forth. So it's a little more complicated than blame the system. Dr. Young, I can see you want to jump in.
Well, if we take a little bit longer historical perspective, in the early 1900s, when there were 80% home births, maternal mortality was 600 to 900 per 100,000 live births. Today, maternal mortality dropped to a low of 7 in, I think, 1997, and is rising. It's up to 16. I think the trend is because of the reasons Dr. Fisher mentioned. Also, women are choosing to have babies at a later age, and they're more likely to have medical problems like hypertension, diabetes, heart disease. The leading reason for maternal mortality in our country is actually cardiovascular disease.
Really?
So that's been a change. Neonatal mortality in the early 1900s with 80% home births was 100 per 1,000 births.
Neonatal mortality means, again, what? That's baby or the mom?
The baby.
The baby. Sorry. Okay, the baby dying, yeah.
And today it's dropped to 7 per 1,000 births in an environment where the average rate of home births is around 1% in our country. So I do think we've improved over the last 100 years the rates of babies' deaths at birth and moms' deaths with childbirth.
Lots of interesting trends all feeding into this. Autumn, your thoughts, and then back to our callers.
So we've certainly seen a drop in neonatal mortality since the 1800s, but it's also true that the United States continues to lag far behind the rest of the developed world in neonatal mortality. And I don't think that we can blame all of that on women, on unhealthy lifestyles or more complicated presentation at the time that they become pregnant. I think that in addition to some of the innovative models that Dr. Fisher mentioned, we can do a better job promoting wellness and teaching about health and keeping women healthy so that they have better pregnancies and better outcomes. It's not something we're very good at right now.
That has to do with our caller's earlier point about midwives sometimes having a little more time to mm-hmm. just really talk to the woman, how you doing. Obstetricians, people feel like are rushed. They're seeing, 100 patients. That's a complaint, Dr. Fisher. Can you address that very quickly, that people do feel like the midwives have more time to just really have a conversation? How you doing?
Sure. I think that that's a fair generalization. I think that it's a frustration that I have, and I'm sure Oge shares, as obstetricians. It would be nice to be able to spend a lot more time with our patients. Again, I'm interested in thinking about new ways to deliver care so that we can change that dynamic a little bit. We get pulled in a lot of different directions as OBGYNs. It's a very exciting way to come to work every day because you never quite know what to expect. But having said that, it does make it challenging to have lots of time to spend with women and families.
Let's go back to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And to Nancy in Wilton. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had two children both at home, and they were wonderful experiences. And with the first one, I had a complication where the baby was asynclinic, so her head was tilted a little. And because the midwives, I just wanted to make the point that the midwives are so well-trained. My midwife actually went to South America to be trained, and she knew exactly what to do and was able to actually turn the baby slightly so that I was able to progress normally. And had I been in the hospital, I would have been carted off to the emergency room to have a C-section.
So two home births, and you were happy with both of them, Nancy.
They were absolutely amazing. Yes, okay. I would totally recommend it to everyone.
Well, except we've heard, Nancy, everybody can't, right? Because if you've got some risk factors, then you're
yes,
not
exactly.
allowed to.
Yeah. Of course. Yes, and I was screened for those risk factors.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Nancy. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And we got a Facebook comment earlier from Sarah, who says, last fall, I delivered at Concord Birth Center. It was the best way to bring our daughter into the world I can imagine. While most were supportive of our decision, it was shocking to have people question that choice. Birth is not a one-size-fits-all experience. As a community, we need to be supportive of everyone's birth choices. Talk a little bit more about that, Dr. Young. How do you help women kind of wade through that birth choice decision? Sarah, thank you very much for the Facebook comment.
Well, when I talk to a woman about choosing where she'd like to have her baby, I make the point that often, especially with a first pregnancy, the focus tends to be on birth experience. And to be honest with you, there's no more positive birth experience than having a healthy child. And so, you know, until you've had a child, you don't realize that no birth experience is going to be a positive experience if you don't have that healthy child. Most women would walk through a brick wall to go home with a healthy child after their birthing experience, no matter how they've delivered or where they've delivered. I do feel, and I am biased, I'm an obstetrician, that there are events in labor that are very unpredictable. And if it's my wife or my daughter-in-law, I guess I would choose that she be in a hospital, not at home, where sometimes unpredictable events occur. And
well, we have an email, actually, from Karen, who talks about an unpredictable event that happened in her birth. She says it was discovered that the umbilical cord that had been wrapped around my son's neck and the stronger contractions brought on by the Pitocin were causing the placenta to detach. Karen says, if I'd not been in a hospital, she says, it is very likely my son would have either died or been born with possibly severe brain damage. Karen says any visit to a hospital carries risks, particularly with regard to opportunistic infection exposure. However, she says, in my case, the benefits far outweighed the risk. She says the ideal situation could be a facility midway between a home birth and a hospital where the birth environment is as home-like as possible, but if fetal monitoring and or emergency care are needed, they are immediately available. And I know all of you will have thoughts on that. I know, Dr. Fisher, you're looking into some of those sort of middle ground situations. A lot of those exist already. The Mom's Place at Concord Hospital, which I'm familiar with, has that sort of middle ground feel to it. Karen, thank you very much for that email, and we'll follow up in just a moment. You can join us with your emails as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We'll be back in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the personal, social, and economic costs of racism. Then, part family saga, part murder mystery, best-selling author Lynn Ullman discusses her latest novel. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather cloudy with some rain today, high temperatures in the 40s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide, information at d-hdocs.org. And from SIT Graduate Institute, offering internationally focused master's degree programs, hosting an open house at the Brattleboro campus on May 2nd. Information at sit.edu. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, are we due for a wallop of an allergy season? We'll find out tomorrow. You can join us before the program at exchange@nhpr.org with an email or Facebook comment, NHPR Exchange, all one word. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today on The Exchange, more on the out-of-hospital childbirth trend that we're seeing in New Hampshire and in about a dozen other states nationwide. 1-800-892-6477 is our phone number for you to join our conversation. And Autumn Virgo, Dr. Fisher, Dr. Young, let's talk a little bit about Karen's email that I read before the break. She gave birth to her son in the hospital. She was glad she did. There was an umbilical cord wrapped around his neck, a terrifying situation. She says any visit to a hospital carries risks, but she was darn glad that she was there. And she's asking, Dr. Fisher, to you first, she's asking, is there a middle ground, a facility midway between a home birth and a hospital where the birth environment is as home-like as possible, but emergency backup care is available?
Sure. So unforeseen and emergent complications can arise in any birth. That's true. They're relatively rare. And I would absolutely agree that having access to certain kinds of resources that are only available in a hospital can absolutely make a big difference if those rare and unforeseen complications occur. What we know from studying home birth is that most of the time when a woman is transferred from a home or birth center setting to the hospital, it's for a non-emergent or non-urgent indication. For instance, their labor stalls, or they've made a different decision about pain management. And so the times that we see a true emergency coming in from a home or birth center are relatively rare. However, I think this gets to the point, and Autumn can address this perhaps more, about a really robust informed consent conversation that's necessary when counseling women about their choice of birth site so that they understand what those resource limitations are in one place or another, in the same way that the resources that I have available to me at Cheshire Medical Center are a little bit different than those available to a woman at Beth Israel or at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. So there's a spectrum, certainly. To get back to the point of what's the middle ground, one way we've tried to address this in our practice is we have what we call a collaborative practice model. So I work alongside 5 certified nurse midwives along with my 4 physician partners. The majority of our low-risk women and the vast majority of our vaginal births are attended by certified nurse midwives.
So you guys are the backup.
We're the backup. So we feel really strongly about that model of care as sort of finding that sweet spot, having those resources available, and yet embracing and supporting a primary midwifery model of care, which Autumn has alluded to.
Yeah, Autumn, I'd love your thoughts on this, and I have another question for you, too.
So I think, for this conversation, it's really important to understand what is available in birth centers and at home births in New Hampshire. And so, you know, as Dr. Fisher said, emergencies can happen, but they're very rare. And to some extent, they're predictable in a population of low-risk, healthy women who are expecting full-term babies. So for the common things that can arise, midwives have training to deal with those events when they happen in community settings, and you know, also carry resuscitation equipment and oxygen and drugs to treat postpartum hemorrhage. So it's not as if there's a choice between no care and a higher level of care. Midwives in New Hampshire who are practicing within their defined scope of practice have access to what they need to treat problems as they arise. There is fetal monitoring at home birth and in birth centers, that is on the same schedule as monitoring in the hospital for low-risk women. So I think that some of these conversations get complicated because we're not all of the same understanding about what's available in birth centers and at home.
So a birth center, isn't just your home, maybe with an extra bed. I mean, there's a lot of medical equipment there. And
right. There's definitely equipment there, and it's all portable, so it all comes to home birth. So when we attend a home birth, we have the same equipment that is in the birth center. We just bring it to the woman's home.
How do you feel about emails like Karen's, though, women who say, I was really glad I was at that hospital. This was terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it's also really important for every woman to be able to make that choice for herself. Women are the ones who live with the outcome of their birth experience, and they're the ones who will then raise their baby. And so they need to be the ones who choose where to give birth. It's not my decision. It's hers.
Well, and one more question for you, Autumn. On the model that Dr. Fisher talked about, and I've seen this model elsewhere as well, there are midwives who practice in that hospital setting. So, they provide you prenatal care, and then when it's time to give birth, as long as everything's fine, they help you deliver the baby mm-hmm. at the hospital. What are the benefits and drawbacks of that model, in your opinion, of this sort of middle ground midwifery, if I could call it that?
Right. So we end up talking about this with our clients quite a bit as part of the informed choice process, because I think it's really important for women to understand that when they're choosing to have a birth in a freestanding birth center or at home, there is a delay to consider in seeking a higher level of care if it becomes necessary. We're not right down the hall from help, so that's certainly an advantage to being in the hospital that there's help immediately available. The disadvantage is that it may be home-like, but it's not home. So women who have home births deliver in their own beds in their own bedrooms with their family around them, it is a very different feeling from being in a hospital and having a lot of strangers around. Even the nicest hospital in New Hampshire or on the planet is not the same as being in your own bedroom.
Well, and for some reason, when you're at the hospital, 8 million people need to come in while you're sleeping. They just keep knocking on the door. They're all nice people. They're all trying to help you out, but it is hard to catch a good night's sleep in a hospital. All right, let's go back to our listeners. And Bob is calling from Manchester. Hi, Bob. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hello. This is Bob. Mine was more of a comment than a question. When we first came to Manchester, we started looking around for some place for my wife to have her birth experience. And I came from a medical family myself. I was raised with medical people all around me, doctors, et cetera. So my initial inclination was toward a hospital, but in looking at what my wife wanted to do and also the cost associated with it, since my wife was not insured, we ended up going over to the birthing center in Milford. Liked what we saw there. We're looking forward to a birth there and ran into a situation with the gestational diabetes, treated with diet, et cetera. And unfortunately, from our perspective at least, they declined to have us deliver there at the birthing center and recommended that we go to the to Elliott. We did go to Elliott. It turned out to be a good call on their part. Her delivery was very difficult, and we came fairly close to ending up in a C-section situation, but at the last, after many hours of labor, he finally decided to come out.
They make their own choices, don't they, Bob? Thank you for the call. This gets into, Dr. Young, the idea that, you know, there are certain patients who really are strongly encouraged to be in a hospital setting.
Absolutely. I really respect somebody like Autumn, who kind of sets the rules as to who is going to labor at her birthing center or at home versus a woman who really should be in the, you know, the hospital. And I do think you markedly decrease your risk of complications with that labor by doing that. I do want to say, we owe a deep of gratitude to midwives for the changes that occurred in obstetrical care in the 70s, the natural childbirth movement, and very grateful for that. I think hospitals are trying very hard to create a more home-like environment than used to be in a hospital, and for that, I'm very grateful.
Well, and we have seen in the 80s and 90s, when New Hampshire's demographics were maybe a little bit different, hospitals did build these lovely birth centers, the Mom's Place at Concord Hospital, there's a place at Elliott and so forth, and they are very home-like. So here's the economic question for you, Dr. Fisher, that one of our callers raised earlier. Is part of this out-of-hospital birth trend worrying because hospitals are going, gee, we built these lovely birthing centers and now people aren't using them? Is there an economic competition here?
There are certainly economic factors. There's no question. It's expensive to maintain hospital-based labor and delivery units. You have to staff them 24/7. You have to maintain.
Even if nobody's there?
Exactly.
Birth,
even
right.
If nobody's there. We have to have nurses on duty for the patient who might come through the door. So it is relatively costly. For many hospitals, their labor and delivery units are not profit centers, but that's not why we take care of people. That's not why hospitals exist. We exist to care for people in our communities. And so I would be very reluctant to say that hospitals maintain labor and delivery units for the purpose of making money. But it is an expensive proposition. There's no question.
And if more people are choosing home births, then, you know, those beds are empty.
Yeah. And so, again, to maybe take it to a little bit of a higher level from a health policy and workforce consideration standpoint, one other interesting thing that we're really going to be struggling with as OBGYNs is changes in our workforce demographics. There have been some interesting studies looking at what's the supply of OBGYNs relative to anticipated demand for services. And it's another factor in this conversation that I think is important to stay aware of. And more specifically, they're not building old youngs anymore. Let me put it that way. We know that we have a relatively shrinking workforce relative to the work at hand to do. And so I think thinking more broadly about who else can we bring into that circle of people who care for women is really important.
Let's take another call. This is Lydia in Goshen. Hi, Lydia. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just would like to ask women out there, and I'm a nurse. I'm an OB nurse. I've been an OB nurse for about 17 years now, and I do work actually in Vermont. But I would just like to throw it out there to women who are going to deliver, either through a midwife or a hospital, to educate yourself on your doctor, on what procedures are out there, and just to be informed about what would happen to your body either way. If you're going to have a cesarean section, what get some information on what that is. If you're going to deliver vaginally, or if, you know, just get informed about your body and what is going to happen to your body, because I think it's very important. It's the most important thing that happens to a woman in a woman's life is to deliver her baby. And just the memory of it and everything will just last with you forever.
Well, so Lydia, what information, it sounds like you're saying, what information don't women get enough of, or aren't they getting? You're encouraging people to have this information. What don't they have, in your opinion?
What I find is that a lot of people come to the hospital and if it's their first baby, deliver a baby and not know about an episiotomy, a cesarean section, different complications that could happen, or how to prepare your body for birth. And it's kind of frustrating to me a little bit that a lot of people don't do birthing classes, because they're so important to just become more educated about what's going to happen to your body. More information is better.
Hopefully you'd get some of that in your prenatal care, Lydia, but it doesn't sound like you think people are.
I don't know about that, but that would be another important thing to ask, too, for a woman to ask prenatal, what information can I have about delivering my baby? Because very often, like I just had a dear friend ask me, a gentleman asked me, you know, they're going to come to my hospital to have a baby, and he just sat down with me and he said, what's going to happen? And I just felt so, you know, like I just want him to get more informed about, like, go to childbirth classes.
Sure.
Learn what's going to happen. This is a very normal, natural thing that can happen. There are a lot of complications that can happen as well. And I just think that people need to be informed about birth.
Okay. Lydia, thank you very much for calling. Good to hear from someone who's an OB nurse. What do you think, Autumn?
I think that you raise a really good point, and it's certainly one of the hallmarks of midwifery care, these longer visits and closer relationships and more time for teaching and education and more time for families to ask questions. You know, that's certainly a reason that women choose to come into care with midwives.
Yeah, what about that, Dr. Young? I know we've covered this a little bit before, but our caller, Lydia, is right. The information piece is so important, and sometimes people feel like OBGYN docs just don't have time to impart that information, and it is important for a successful birth.
Well, it is. I've been disturbed recently that more and more couples are not doing prepared childbirth classes, and I'm not sure why. Or are they taking an online class? I was in one of the first prepared childbirth classes at Dartmouth back when I was a first-year medical student. I hate to admit it, but Pam, my wife, and I had our first child as a first-year medical student.
That's busy.
And she has been a long-time childbirth educator. And it is it's disturbing to me because I think information is so important going into the experience.
So maybe people are expecting to get it from their OBGYN or their midwife. Are you saying, Dr. Young, that they also need to bear a responsibility to take the childbirth class and read up on this? And maybe that online course doesn't give you everything you need.
That and I do personally try and spend a good amount of time going through the birth process with my patients. The reason I'm able to do that is I actually work in a group. I made that a conscious choice back when I started practice. It allows us to practice a little more like midwives in the hospital. One of us is always with one of our laboring patients because there were five of us back in the 80s. Now there are seven of us, and so we do spend more time with our patients. Yeah. I always like to claim that we practice like midwives.
Well, Lydia, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Fisher, I can see you want to jump in.
I was just going to add, we have prenatal coordinators that work in our hospital and through our practice, and boy, they're really pulling their hair out about this issue. Unfortunately, there's
this issue of lack of information.
This issue of lack of information and challenges in getting people to come to the table around prenatal education. Unfortunately, there's not an app for that. And what we see is, I think, in a changing demographic, people are interested in getting information quickly and on their smartphone, and this is one of those things that I think a good old-fashioned sit-down session goes a long way.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for being here. Real interesting conversation. Thanks to everybody who chimed in. Dr. Young, it was good to see you.
Good to see you, Laura.
Dr. Og Young, obstetrician at Concord Hospital in practice for more than 30 years. Autumn Virgo, great to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Autumn Virgo, New Hampshire certified midwife, co-owner of the Birth Cottage in Milford. And Dr. Fisher, it's good to meet you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Dr. Dim Fisher, chairman of surgical services at Cheshire Medical Center, Dartmouth Hitchcock Keene. Also, this conversation has been continuing on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Also, the NHPR program The World has been looking at this issue of family decisions, family planning. You can tune into The World for more information on that as well. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, alarm over allergies. Biologists say this year's cold winter and late spring could mean a wallop of an allergy season, a so-called pollen vortex, as part of a longer trend toward higher pollen counts attributed to climate change. We'll look at that, and later, state leaders cast about for solutions after a court decision on a hospital tax blows a huge hole in the budget. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from University of New Hampshire in Manchester, accepting applications for fall 2014. More information online at manchester.unh.edu. And the spa at the Common Man Inn in Plymouth, providing the uncommon baby moon getaway for expecting couples to refresh the mind, body, and soul. Information at theseamaninn.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. At a press conference yesterday, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver announced a lifetime ban and a $2.5 million fine for Clippers owner Donald Sterling. He was caught on tape making racist statements about African Americans. The decision